welcome to Charity Chat. I'm your host, Samuel Davies. In this episode, we speak with Sally Bagwell, Associate Director at NPC. We speak about the challenges leaders face when governing in a crisis and what tools and tactics they can employ to overcome them. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for businesses to fundraise from sales quick and easy, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and to book a free demo. So without further ado, here is Sally Bagwell speaking to me about governing in a crisis. I'm delighted to be joined by Sally Bagwell, Associate Director at NPC. Sally, welcome to Charity Chats.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam. Nice to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much for giving up your time today. I think the first question would be for you, what is your background? What's led you to what you do now at NPC?
Yeah, well, I started out working in a little social enterprise. I guess I've always been interested in the opportunities to make the charity sector the best it can be. And that kind of slightly behind the scenes, slightly infrastructure role. So yeah, I started out in a little place that was about making it easier to get good information about charities and how they work. And from there, I moved to a kind of infrastructure organisation, like a local CVS in South London, where I was doing trustee and governance support, sustainability, fundraising advice, running training, that kind of thing. And from there to NPC, and I've been at NPC about 10 years now. There I do a lot of work with boards and executive teams for funders and for operating charities. And the work I do is often focused on strategy and decision making, making sure that whenever you're doing your strategy, you're thinking about your DEI, you're thinking about your kind of place within the wider system, you're thinking about how you involve your users and whether you're doing co-production in that. So drawing on the expertise of lots of colleagues across NPC and you know, thinking about how that strategy feeds into your measurement and evaluation, your learning practice. So I guess a lot of my work is guided by the question of how do you make good decisions? And at the moment, a lot of our focus is on how do you make good decisions in a world where the pace of change is speeding up.
What's your first memory of charity? Were you involved in charities at a young age? Were you a beneficiary of a charity, or were you fundraising as part of your school or anything like that?
Do you know what? Not really, actually. I don't think it's it's weird. I'm a parent now, and it is really important to me to kind of live it and help my kids see that involvement in the charity sector and that kind of leading a good life is about doing stuff beyond yourself. But actually, I think for me, it was professional experience first. You know, straight out of university, I was looking for kind of socially motivated stuff to do. I looked at the civil service and sort of fell into a job as most people do, I guess, or as lots of people do. And it's become more and more of an interest and a passion and a place where you see so many people with such talents and such commitment and amazing ideas and kind of pushing boundaries of what you can do. It feels like a kind of exciting place to work and make a difference to me.
Absolutely. And I'm sure certainly me and I'm sure our audience are probably of the same view as well, which hopefully why they're listening to this podcast, right? But in terms of kind of your work over the last few years then, has it been predominantly behind the scenes in terms of working with charity leaders and boards of trustees and things like that? Have you had a chance to see the output of those charities in terms of seeing projects working and meeting beneficiaries? Is kind of an old-fashioned term now that I keep on using. I need to find a different term, but meeting those that the projects are there to support.
To an extent, and increasingly so, I think. So yes, it's true that most of the work that I do is with the exec and the trustee team, working on strategy. Increasingly, I think organisations know that Do a Good Strategy is a really big theme of a paper that we've got out at the moment, which is we're kind of here to talk about, which is about kind of governing in times of change, in times of crisis. But even without that framing, I think everybody knows that if you can't write your strategy in a cupboard, it might look good on paper, but it's not going to make any sense to the people you're working with. It's not going to make any sense to your staff. It's not going to stick, because ultimately what people do every day is what they believe is the right thing to do. And so any strategy process has to be about listening and learning and come to a shared idea about where you're going to make the most difference going forwards. And I really, really believe in strategy as culture rather than strategy as a document. So it's been really nice to work increasingly in that way and work increasingly with exec teams and staff teams and governance teams who are listening to the people that they work with, and to be part of those engagements sometimes, but also sometimes to recognize that I'm not the best person to talk to those people. You know, I need to get out of the way and let the people who are working directly with communities have those conversations with communities.
It's helpful, isn't it, in a kind of crisis situation? If crisis is sometimes changing the norm for organizations too and how they adapt to situations, presumably it's helpful then for organizations to bring in people from outside to help them look at things differently. Is that a big part of what you're doing?
I do think sometimes it's really important to bring someone in and help look at things differently. And we do that, but actually I don't think it's always essential that you, I think what's important is that you think about what are the right inputs and you look outwards to get those right inputs. And I think it's much, you know, the idea of saying, where's the data on how needs are shifting? What do we know about how this is being experienced by people on the ground? And how do you make sure that the people with real world experience are also involved, not only in feeding in their experience, but also in interpreting this data and making the decisions? I think that is the key, really. And I think what someone like MPC can do is to help structure those conversations, help understand where they're saying the same thing in different words or saying different things in the same words but actually meaning different things, and helping to kind of untangle some of those slight differences in how this thing is understood to come to this shared consensus. So I think, yeah, I think the external view from someone like MPC is really helpful to kind of see the gaps in the process, but actually the insight doesn't come from us. The insight comes from the data, from listening to people.
So you're kind of facilitating the conversation from internal yeah. stakeholders. Is that a way of looking at it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think we do different stuff in different contexts. Definitely kind of that external facilitation, that sort of helping move conversations, which can get quite emotive because people really care and they're really motivated by doing it right. But it's still possible to have different views of how to do it right, and sort of negotiating some of those differences, I think, is where external input can help. I mean, the other thing that we can do that's really useful is help people look to the evidence base, because we're really experienced in looking to the evidence base, and it can feel quite daunting to kind of navigate what insight there is out there. And it can be kind of quicker and more efficient to get someone who does it to help, so that when you're having those debates, the debates are based on a shared understanding of the evidence, rather than different people having different parts of the evidence in their head.
So today we're talking about governing in a crisis. What challenges are you seeing leaders having specifically in the third sector at the moment?
We've put a paper out recently and we've talked about permacrisis, and you may or may not like that language, but there is the sense that the last 3 years have been ever-changing in nature and that the pace of change shows no signs of stopping. So we had the pandemic, of course. We have the kind of inflationary pressures at the moment, which are translating for organisations as well as in the cost of living crisis, and there's no sign that that's slowing. Also, we've got the climate and nature crisis, which people are increasingly grappling with, whether or not that's sort of the explicit focus of the organisation. And it really feels like it's not enough to sort of batten down the hatches and sit tight at the moment. There is no temporary stopgap, but we need to sort of fundamentally change the way that we're making decisions. And I think charting that course is one of the big challenges people are facing at the moment. So for anyone leading an organization, it is that finding that balance between having real clarity on the direction you're going, knowing where you want to go, not drifting with the tides, but also not blindly following a path as the world changes around you. So it's that kind of clarity on the direction of goal, but being flexible about how you get there. And I think the thing I'd add to that, which is a particular dynamic for boards, is to recognize that when we're in these times of change, when we're in times of crisis, it's a crisis for the organization. It can be a crisis for the organization to navigate and to kind of steward the resources and take good decisions but much more importantly, it's a crisis that's experienced by the people that you're working with. And so it's sort of keeping those two things in mind, but making sure that the decisions you're taking are with reference to your mission, with reference to the people who are experiencing these kind of changes and challenges in their lives. And I think associated with that is thinking about risk management rather than risk minimization. And I think it can feel as a trustee, as in the executive team as well, but I think particularly in the trustee role where you're not in there day to day, all day, every day, it can feel like doing a good job is avoiding risk. And actually avoiding risk means avoiding opportunities and avoiding the opportunity to do things differently and to do things better and make a bigger difference. So I think that shifting to that mindset about risk management and opportunity management is really key at this point.
That's really interesting because I guess it made me think about Deborah Alcock Tyler's book around managing, is it Battle on the Board? I think she's written a book about kind of managing the board and trustees. And then I was thinking about the, we had during the beginning of the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, we had lots of kind of feedback from charities who were struggling with an abundance of board meetings, I guess kind of reassuring board members, but also not being able to really reassure them because there are so many things outside of their control. Is there a sense at the moment that because we're talking about kind of there's, you know, we had the pandemic crisis, we've got the cost of living crisis, we've got various other things happening, kind of long-term environmental crisis, war in Ukraine, various things like this. Is there a sense that maybe organizations are a bit more resilient than they might have been, that they've kind of, there's a bit of a muscle memory on, you know, how organizations can adapt to changes in society?
I mean, yeah, I think that's probably true, actually. I think that the sector has shown amazing resilience through this. And yeah, I think there is a sense of, you know, first year, 18 months of the pandemic, a kind of like, let's just get through it and realization that that's not going to be the case. It's not going to go back to normal. And I think, yeah, lots of really good practice taking the best of those changes. I think there's a really interesting theme for organizations and for boards about the move to hybrid working and remote working. And that sounds like quite a boring point about not always being in a room together for meetings, but I think it's actually quite a fundamental point because it gives you a chance to rethink how your decisions are made. And rather than saying, you know, everyone has to nod their head, it makes you think about how do you input and collaborate when you're not together? How can you make sure that your papers are not just something that you read and you nod and then you have a conversation about them, but actually your papers are a way of collaborating. You think about how you make your decisions differently than just on the spot based on what you've talked about. And I think there's some quite interesting kind of maturing of that model and like benefiting from all the really great things about accessibility of governance and accessibility of trusteeship for people with different working commitments and caring commitments and geographical locations. And yeah, the benefits of this sort of ability to take decisions in a different way. And alongside that, recognizing what you lose in terms of how important it is to have those personal relationships, to be in person, to kind of get what someone means when they say something, some of that intangible stuff. And yeah, it feels like the future, there are really nice opportunities to meld those kind of opportunities to a new model of a kind of new way of tackling governance. We did some really nice work sort of in the middle of the pandemic, I think just after the first phase, with a decision-making consultancy called Leapwise, which is called Charity Boards in Recovery. But it's I think it's so interesting about all of this topic about how you make good decisions, how you show kind of leadership, how you kind of navigate being a really effective board, taking good decisions, thinking about your organizational performance. And if anyone's sort of thinking about that, even now as the sort of model's maturing, then I'd really encourage them to take a look at Charity Boards in Recovery. It was published in 2020, but there's good stuff in there.
Tactics are charities employing to successfully respond to the impacts of the current cost of living crisis?
There's sort of four things that we see really successful organisations doing, and they're all a bit linked, I guess. The first is always going back to your mission and thinking about mission over organisation. And I think anytime anyone talks about governance, they say this, but it doesn't go away. I think there's something about we've talked a bit about, you know, managing risk rather than minimizing risk, about thinking about what you're here for rather than what you're currently doing, and being ready to flex how you work in that way. And often things that come out of necessity end up being really useful and interesting and kind of innovative long-term changes. We talked with an organization, Quo Vadis Trust, who provides social housing, and they had a kind of emergency response around COVID about sort of street homelessness and kind of getting people off the streets. But it was so successful supporting 130 rough sleepers through the pandemic that it led to kind of 5-year funding and a new model of doing things.
Wow.
And so I think there's something really, really powerful about kind of holding what you do less lightly and holding why you do it so tightly in that way. I guess kind of, you know, if the first point is mission and the second part is being open to change, I think it's really important. What we're seeing organizations doing is planning differently and planning different people call it different things, adaptively, responsively, in an agile way. But thinking about kind of smaller cycles of learning and iteration, so that you're sort of setting your, rather than setting a 3-year strategy with all of your kind of milestones laid out, you're setting your sort of longer term goal with maybe your kind of annual plan and your 6-monthly review of whether that's still the right plan. And we've seen a really nice example of that in Mencap, who've really focused in their big plan. They call it big plan rather than a strategy. And they've really focused on how they're going to make decisions rather than what decisions they're going to make. And then a couple of other things, which I think are really important. One is, sort of a third one is about thinking about where you're getting your information. So if you're looking for those closer, smaller cycles of iteration, you need to know that you've got up-to-date information to use when you're pivoting. And I think, you know, there's kind of increasingly accessible data on needs, on information there, but also that kind of user insight and sort of making sure you're kind of listening to what your frontline staff, but literally the people that they're talking to, and making sure you've got a channel to hear what's affecting people in their lives, so that you can kind of pivot as you need to.
That's the qualitative kind of feedback part of it, isn't it? In terms of quantitative feedback, is that kind of organizations using things like Google Analytics and social media analytics and things like that? Is that part of that kind of process?
Yeah, I think there's stuff like that, but there's also kind of interesting kind of collated data sources. So we've got something called a local needs data bank, which uses data from kind of administrative data and data from a couple of other sources that you can filter, and it helps you kind of see the needs of communities. And there's other things, you know, the NCVO Almanac has quite a good, is less frequently updated, but it's got really good stats on what's going on in the sector. And there's a couple of other sources that you can use.
See the charity landscape evolving over the coming years? How do you think governance will need to evolve in order to deliver charity?
A couple of things that we see. I think one of the things that we're seeing is a lot more connectivity between and across organisations, and this realisation, I guess, as we understand that the pace of change is speeding up, and we understand that needs are changing and all of the players in a system are changing, you know, losing funding, hopefully in some cases gaining funding, you know, shifting to spot and respond to the needs that they see. This kind of sense of interconnectedness, I think, is growing and increasingly important. And so that sort of system perspective, as you set you chart your course, and as you say, you know, it feels quite daunting to do a systems change approach or to take a systems perspective, but I think it a lot of us know instinctively that seeing what everyone else is doing and situating yourself within it so that you are, you know, making effective referrals, filling the gaps that most need filling, spotting the places and the opportunities to be more than the sum of your parts, I think is increasingly on people's minds. And we're seeing some really nice examples of people doing that. And I think the other key point I'd bring, which is a kind of build on some of the stuff we were talking about in terms of hearing from users, and it's the voices that you have in governance. So I think it's not enough to just hear from your users, to survey them and to involve them in focus groups and feed that up to your kind of trustee board. I think it's really important that the people who the experiences of whatever you're focused on, people with that experience are also involved in interpreting that data and taking decisions off the back of it. And I think that's a really, to do that well, I think often requires a really fundamental shift, because it's not just about having one person or even a couple of people with that perspective on the board. Is also about thinking about how do you set up your board and the way you take decisions and the way you have your conversations, so that that person can show up as themselves and can communicate in the way that they best communicate to bring value, rather than having to fit in with a really highly kind of structured, often really traditional sort of structures of governance that people can find it really hard to find their voice in if that's not been a big part of their experience to date. So I think shifting the way that the experience of users is not only fed into boards but also on boards, interpreting and taking decisions, is going to be and doing that in a way that feels really kind of fulfilling and valuable rather than tokenistic is going to be a big shift that we're seeing people grapple with.
Sally Bagwell, thank you for contributing to Charity Chats.
Thanks. It's been an absolute pleasure. Really nice to talk to you.
A big thank you to Sally Bagwell for sharing her insights and expertise with us here on Charity Chat. Sally talked about the need for charities to understand the insights and evidence that can help their leaders to make wise decisions. Charity leaders need to lead on identifying trends among their peers, as well as data from their own operations, including qualitative feedback and quantitative markers too. By building in collaboration and co-design with stakeholders, organisations may stand a better chance of adapting when their environment is in flux, as well as ensuring their charity is delivering efficiently against their organisational objectives. One of the challenges that charity leaders and their boards of trustees face is risk and how to deal with it. Sally cautioned that focusing on avoiding risk might end up being the avoidance of opportunities to do things differently. We've talked before on the podcast about the code of governance for charities and the need for diligent risk registers and mitigation of risk, but this needs to be balanced with the risk of not acting. or over hesitance of seeking out new opportunities for the organisation, including partnerships and funding opportunities. Charities that seek out and are open to identifying opportunities to be more than the sum of their parts, to collaborate with other organisations and adapt to meet gaps in service delivery, will stand a better chance of getting to the other side of crisis points. So thank you, dear listener, for getting this far with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to enjoy the podcast. We'd love to hear either way. Please do like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Plus, share with any colleagues or friends who may be interested. It's just left for me to thank our corporate sponsors. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for businesses to fundraise from sales quick and simple, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and to book a free demo. Giant Squid Audio Lab for sponsoring our podcast kit. Magda Axsmith for our beautiful website. Check it out at charitychat.org.uk. And of course, Forrester Fools for playing throughout the show and for playing us out right now. That's it from me. Keep on doing what you can. Speak to you soon. Cheerio. Bye-bye.